Youth Focus, a series dealing with issues of concern to people aged 15 to 24. This week, Lynn Price and Jocelyn Sampson examine media effects on youth.
In an average week, Canadians watch in excess of 500 million hours of television. By the time the average young person graduates from high school, he or she will have spent more time in front of the television set than in the classroom. In addition to television, there are the radios, magazines, and newspapers. The impact of the media as a socializing force cannot be ignored. Although studies have often been contradictory, the overall findings of research in the area show that there is a definite correlation between the information in the media and the attitude that those who are exposed to this information then hold. One recent American study, for instance, has shown that heavy television viewers are more fearful than the average individual. They are also more likely to call in the police and are more likely to vote right-wing. But even leaving aside the research, one can almost rely on intuition and common sense about this subject. Media Watch is a national women's organization working to improve the portrayal of women and girls in the media. Lucy Alderton is a Vancouver member.
I think we have to use our common sense in looking at this problem. And just think about a constant bombardment of information that tells us the only kind of women that are of value are young, white, beautiful women. Now, if you see that image over and over all your life, what do you think that does to a person? What do you think that makes you think of? Why do you think that about 75% of women in our society feel that they are overweight or are inadequate in terms of their appearance? Why do we have all these eating disorders, for instance? We have a tremendous pressure on women and girls to be thin and beautiful. So that's something to think about.
The messages and stereotypes that the media presents often have little to do with reality. The materialistic, sexist, violent images add up to a misrepresentation of life as it is outside the media. Dr. Patricia Groves is a sociologist and an associate dean at Capilano College. She has specialized in media and has taught the subject at college for many years. She believes that TV, for one, presents a gross distortion of reality.
If you were to take television as a model of reality, which I used to do in my 100 classes, and you compare the demographics, for instance, of television, the stereotypes of television, with reality, it's so distorted, it is really shocking. Even in something so simple as the murder rate in television, you know, it's 1,000 times the murder rate in real life. That there's almost nobody who's old in this world. There's almost nobody who's young. There are very few ethnic groups. And the problems between people are things that are solved in a second. Well, at least in half an hour. So the relationship of television to reality is absolutely bizarre. And yet, those people who are socialized into watching a lot of television end up thinking that the real world is like the television model.
Young people are especially susceptible to media influences because of their lack of discerning capabilities. Studies have shown that young people are unable to differentiate between television programs and commercials. Obviously, children gain this ability with maturity, but do all media messages become as clear to people with age? Media messages are agonized over so as to penetrate us. Are we always able to see past them? For the first time, we are witnessing the coming of age of a generation raised on television and are seeing the effects of the medium on these young people. Lucy Alderton.
It's also this generation that has grown up on television. When I was growing up, I didn't watch television till I was about 6 or 7. And this generation is seeing it from day one. And so unless we require and demand that television and radio reflect a more realistic view of women and men and their relationships and violence as not necessarily the greatest problem-solving tool, then we are already teaching 2- and 3- and 4-year-olds about what their options are for the future.
One of the interests that has come under heavy criticism is the advertising industry. Advertisers are often seen as unscrupulous money vultures who will use any tactic and prey on anyone to make a buck. Westcan Cole & Weber advertising and public relations firm handles the accounts of Labatt's Breweries, Dairyland Dairies, and the Alberta Drug and Alcohol Abuse Commission. This company is the mastermind behind the catchy Kokanee beer ad campaign. Bob Bailey is the account supervisor at Westcan Cole & Weber. He believes that mass media advertising is money efficiently spent on behalf of clients. It is a sales tool used to communicate mass market products to a massive number of people. He agrees that advertising does have an effect on people, but thinks that current cultural trends, such as fashion, may be heightening the apparent effects of media.
A lot of the things that we see and a lot of the images that we see are picked up from youth doing what they do. They may be popularized in such a way that they then become fashion. But again, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I think that there's no question in the era that we live in the extent of mass communications, that it is very easy to see influences that have incredible implications. However, we've got to bear in mind, too, that there's an incredible number of impressions coming at youth today. If we're one of 2,500 messages, it's trying to penetrate into the average youth, and that's about the average these days, 2,500 a day. We have to be fairly meaningful for that person to be able to get through and actually have them or motivate them to do what it is that we like them to do, and that's basically to purchase a product or whatever.
While some people think that youths are unable to critically examine the messages and images the advertisements depict, Bob Bailey maintains that youths do have the ability to decipher commercial messages. He believes that young people are perhaps even more discriminating than adults.
I would be interested to find out if youth actually would say that. If you talk to an average 18-year-old, I haven't met too many of them say, no, I'm not discriminating enough to see that this particular message on television is good or bad for me. I think you would run into a fairly major argument if you made that statement in front of them.
While Youth Focus makes no claims to have found a, quote, average 18-year-old, we did ask Terry Slavik-Sayuki, an 18-year-old Pacific Region youth delegate on the board of Young Canada Television, Télé Jeunesse Canada, what she thought about the effects of media on her and her friends.
I think subconsciously it affects every one of us. If you watch a ski boot commercial, or you read a magazine with ski boots in it, and you see some gorgeous lady who's 5'2" and weighs 98 pounds wearing these ski boots, and you think, wow, if I wear these boots, I'm going to look like this lady. And that's not the case.
But are advertisers really making or intending to make the promises that Terry perceives? Bob Bailey.
I don't think that we're promising anything. We're saying that here's something that's available to you. If an individual's own self-worth is based on that as that material item, then perhaps he's got a problem. But the problem, again, I don't believe is with the advertising. It's with the individual and what he does with it as information.
Media messages seem to repeat the same themes. There is a tremendous emphasis, for instance, placed on consumerism and materialism. Patricia Groves.
It is a general socialization into the values of materialism and consumerism, and into values of superficial ego. These are the things that make you attractive, appealing, important, interesting, exciting. It is a very hyped up, fast-moving, exciting kind of aura.
It is hard to disagree with the observation. The purpose of most advertisements is obviously to sell a product or service and thereby encourage consumerism. Many TV programs take up where commercials end off by carrying the goods and lifestyles of the advertisements over into programming. But is the materialism of Western culture being taught to us by the media, and do we consume because the media tells us to? Or perhaps things are the other way round. Bob Bailey.
People within society make their own decisions as to what they're going to consume. And I am never been convinced that advertising or the media have forced people to make those decisions. Whether the Western society, as you look at, is materialistic and greedy, is probably a function of the people within the society as a whole. And I think it's a much more basic question than saying that they're being manipulated. I think society as a whole is manipulating the media, quite honestly.
Another often heard criticism of the media is that it predominantly depicts financially successful, young, attractive Caucasians. Unattractive, overweight, or minority group people are infrequently presented. Bob Bailey.
Society is made up of any number of subgroups, depending on how you wanted to define those groups. And if we are to accurately show in a 30-second commercial every possible sub-segment, it would be impossible. We couldn't do it. Again, it comes back to who is the target person or persons for the particular product, and what is the best and most average characteristics that that person would have. The people that are spending most of the money these days, and let's face it, we're still in a situation today where 15% of the people in this country are unemployed. We're not showing a lot of things to them because we realize that they're not capable of making or purchasing, let's say, some of the more discretionary types of items. So we do depict more successful people.
4.5 million Canadians are between 15 and 24 years of age. In the transition from youth to adulthood, youths cut the strings to their parents' pocketbooks. They get paying jobs, and often for the first time, they have money to spend. They move away from the family home and furnish a home of their own. They can buy liquor legally for the first time. They indulge in expensive recreation and entertainment. In short, the money they spend makes youths an important target group for many industries. In the course of targeting youths, these industries frequently offer unrealistic, fantastic portrayals of life. Patricia Groves.
Definitely, youth has become an exploitable market. If you just look at movies and how the movie moguls have figured out that it's young people who are buying tickets and therefore will make movies that, you know, that will rip them off emotionally, basically, give them a thrill, make them feel good, and do absolutely nothing for the real conditions of their lives.
Bob Bailey.
The images that communicate the best are those that don't necessarily show us as we are, but as we would like to see ourselves. And so there's a certain fantasy involved in our own depiction of ourselves. I think if you were to ask a lot of folks when they saw a commercial that, say, depicted a very good-looking person in a, let's say, a situation that was similar to the Observer, that they would see themselves in that role. For instance, let's say it was a carpenter. The guy just happened to be good-looking. Now, if we showed that to a room full of carpenters, as long as the guy was dressed properly, he wasn't, you know, making any serious flaws, they would see themselves as that person. It's the Tom Selleck approach, I guess.
With all this fantasy in the media, will youths be disillusioned and bitter when the unrealistic lifestyles do not become their own? Patricia Groves.
I think, yes, they'll be in for disillusionment, but, you know, disillusionment is part of, I think, the experience of life. Life is never what you want it to be, and one of the most basic philosophical insights is that there is always a difference between how you want life to be and how life will be. And maturity, or let's say a sense of developing into a happy and responsible human being, has to do with how you bridge that gap between what you want and what you get. And I think that there is a very real place in life for fantasy and illusion. As long as that fantasy and illusion enables you to develop a drive and an inspiration that will take you a little way in bridging that gap between reality and dreams, and give you energy, but yet not rip you off to the point where you become a cynic or suck you in so much that you end up being a completely unrealistic person, you know?
But why are people, particularly young people, buying into the fantasy and materialism that the media preaches? Patricia Groves sees the insecurity of life today as one possible reason.
There is a great deal more insecurity today in terms of the general conditions of life, and the unemployment situation and the bomb situation and the splintering of the family, the divorce rate and all of those make young people today probably far more insecure than young people of my generation. So there is that need, and probably the easiest, the simplest solution is to believe in the material values and say, well, if I have this car and that set up, then I'll feel secure and I'll feel good and, you know, and I can cope with this world as a strong human being.
Dr. Groves believes that in order to survive and fit into today's culture, young people have to assume a certain level of consumerism. She also offers several other reasons for the apparently successful indoctrination of materialism.
Our society is run by, and I don't mean just in terms of power, I mean in terms of the creation of dominant social reality, by economic, political, and social forces that are all slaves to the material culture. And the other thing is that if you socialize young people into believing in these values on some level, it takes a long time. I think it takes them until they're well into their beginning middle years until they stop and think for themselves and work it out. And thirdly, the whole force of Western civilization is moving in that direction, at least on that outer level. I think inside, as you know, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of insecurity, and there's a lot of confusion. But in terms of the dominant force of the culture, it's very powerful and it's on its way.
The exploitation of sex is another matter for which the media is criticized. Sex, sexuality, and sexiness are used to sell programs and promote products. The media intertwines human sexuality with material goods. Patricia Groves.
Well, what is sexuality? Sexuality really is a communication system for intimacy between human beings. But what is it in the media? It is a method to turn people on, not to each other, but to sell products. It is to get them eroticized and to condition that eroticism so that it goes along with products and greed and consumerism and all those things. So a car is sexy and clothes are sexy and toothpaste is sexy and beer is sexy and food is sexy and, you know, anything is. Then on a more basic level, what is sexual is the woman. And, of course, as we know, men are sexy too. And sexuality is an aspect of the human being, not of women. So women then become the bearers of sexuality, and the female body and the female aura and the female way of dressing and looking and all the stylistic aspects of being a woman in today's culture then become part of sexuality. So sex is then seen to be women. And that, I think, does a great harm to our society, because it's very difficult for women to concentrate on what it is to be a person when all of these things are in the way. And it's very difficult if you're a professional woman or a businesswoman to enter a scene where you and the men in that room have been conditioned to associate female with sex. And maybe specifically the social attributes that are normal, right? To wear lipstick, to have certain kind of shoes, skirts, legs, all the sorts of things that go into the female attire. That all of those things are symbols that are conditioned to eroticize you and to be associated at the same time with products. So then what are women? Women are eroticized products.
Media Watch is concerned not only with the association of women with products, but also with the stereotyping of women and girls. The organization believes that the portrayal of women as pretty, subservient housewives affects the perception and life choices of young people. Lucy Alderton.
So we'll see an advertisement, for instance, for a car, and there will be a young woman draped across the hood or inside the car, appearing as an accessory. And so the message to young men looking for cars is that not only will you, you know, if you get the car, you'll also get the woman. And we all know that it's not something you can purchase with a car. But also that same message is then going out to young women, saying that, you know, that you are there to fulfill someone else's needs, that you are there to serve a purpose that is about on the same status as a car.
But what about the stereotyping of males? Lucy Alderton.
We don't see the same kind of objectification of men in the media. We may see a ridiculous commercial where someone, you know, there's a man that doesn't seem to have too many brains, but then you can just switch the channel and there's, you know, an old, balding, wise man delivering a political analysis. So we see a much greater range of men in the media.
Some think the people who criticize the media for its portrayal of women are overreacting. Lucy Alderton.
Definitely, that's a tactic that is used. No, you don't see, you're not seeing this. This woman is not being used as a decorative lure. It's simply that, you know, we couldn't, if she was wearing pants, then she wouldn't be seen against the black background, and that's why we have taken her pants off and you just see her in a long jacket. Things like that. So we don't take that in. We don't think that we're crazy. When we see things like that, we know that there's a basis for it.
Is the advertising industry making any changes to improve its depiction of women? Bob Bailey.
The industry as a whole has recognized that they've got to clean up their act. Society has not only dictated that there be fairness in the depiction of both men and women, but they are also critical when it doesn't appear. And in fact, there's probably a fair amount of research been done in the last little while where it's actually affected negatively sales of certain products. I think the industry is probably ahead of most people's, or I mean, I believe that the industry is further ahead now in actually discussing it. There's been several task force within the industry. There's been representation all along from special interest groups, particularly women's groups, also the government. And I think in terms of just the peer pressure within our own industry, creative people are very leery these days of using women in a straight stereotype situation. So I think it's definitely being cleaned up.
To say that the media is the only source of misrepresentation of women and girls is unfair. But Lucy Alderton believes that the media isn't helping the situation.
It's not something that happens only in the media. It's an attitude that it permeates our society. When you have a few people, though, that are making key decisions in the media, we have an even greater situation where the reflection of women's lives and the inequality in our society is exaggerated even further. So we can say that it's not the job of the media to show women as presidents and prime ministers and fulfilling all management positions. That's not what we're asking for. We're asking for a more realistic view of women. Because women are scientists and women are mechanics and women do a lot of things, and we don't see that in the media. We don't see them used as experts in the news nearly as much as we do male experts. So we're asking for an improvement on that basis.
The Canadian Broadcasting Act establishes the basic policies as to what can be seen and heard on radio and television. Print media is regulated by press councils and the Criminal Code. The advertising industry is self-regulated through the Advertising Advisory Board and the Advertising Standards Council. In terms of sexual stereotyping, there are only voluntary guidelines at this time.
From 1979 until 1982, a task force established by the Federal Minister of Communications examined the stereotyping of women in the media. The task force determined that the industry should undergo a 2-year period of self-regulation concerning the depiction of women. The self-regulatory period ended in 1984. A hearing in the fall of 1985 will examine whether self-regulation improved the portrayal of women in the media. Bob Bailey.
I think most parties involved in the process are very happy with the situation. I know certainly from the agency standpoint, we have all become more aware of particularly the issues such as sex stereotyping. And again, I believe that the industry is capable of regulating itself. Now, there will always be unscrupulous people out there, but as a profession, and the Institute of Canadian Advertising, which is the major governing body that most of us are affiliated with, at least certainly the majors, I think that they are capable of staying on top of it. And I think we, as just peer pressure alone, will maintain that. Are, as I went on to say before, that our advertising is truthful and it's fairly representing society as a whole.
Lucy Alderton of Media Watch agrees that there have been improvements in the advertising industry under self-regulated guidelines.
There is a direct link there, of course, an economic link, that it's not feasible economically to insult your market. So there's more of a response in that area. So we have seen some improvements there.
Media Watch has just completed its own analysis of sexism in the media since the implementation of the self-regulatory period. Lucy Alderton.
Our consultant, in analyzing the data, came up with the conclusion that there had been a few areas of improvement, such as more women characters in drama and situation comedy, although the actual characters, the types of characters, had not changed. And a little bit of improvement in sexist language. But on the whole, there seemed to be no real difference. And in fact, one could argue that there had been a worsening in the image of women and girls in the media.
Media Watch does not say that self-regulation of media industries will not work. The organization does believe, however, that so far the way in which self-regulation has been implemented has not worked. If self-regulation is not successful, further regulation and legislation may be necessary. Bob Bailey.
I'm opposed, for the most part, to any regulation, not just in this industry, but in when it comes into what I consider to be a form of censorship. Advertising is a message, and it is one of the few messages that we have where we as the person that's directing the message, can actually control what it is we say and how it's reported. And I think the right of free speech in our society should allow us to be able to, you know, make legitimate claims about the products that we have. There are other regulations on the books in terms of manufacturing of products, in terms of quality control, in terms of labeling, in terms of, basically that guarantee consumer protection on products. And I'm certainly not suggesting that those be dismantled. But I get very concerned when people say, you know, there should be regulatory bodies that can comment and actually censor those messages that companies want to put in front of the public.
Patricia Groves.
There's no fear of censorship on television commercials. I mean, no matter how much you censored them, they still find a way around it because they're the most creative, innovative, and determined people around. But yeah, the more rules you give them, the better, I think.
Lucy Alderton.
Censorship is an issue, and for some people, and the key here is freedom of expression. And what we want to do is protect the rights of everyone. We want to give everyone the same rights for correct and accurate and realistic portrayal in the media. And at this point, we are not seeing the full range of women's lives and the shapes that they come in, the sizes, the colors in the media. And so we're looking for an improvement in the overall quality of that programming. So if someone says, well, you're reducing my freedom of expression, it's like saying that someone who has all the power is now having some kind of restriction. So we're trying to equalize rather than reduce someone's rights.
Will regulation and discouragement of materialism, consumerism, and stereotypes make a difference? Can we create social change by cleaning up our media? Patricia Groves.
I think in any attempt to change things within yourself or within the society, that you have to work on all fronts at once. If you make changes in the media without inciting people to make changes within themselves, it won't work because it is a mutual, communicative, interactive process.
Young Canada Television, Télé Jeunesse Canada, is a proposal before the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission. If accepted, the TV channel programs would be produced by and for Canadian youths ages 2 to 24. It would provide an alternative television service for young people and would be devoid of stereotypes, sexism, and advertisements. Terry Slavik-Sayuki of the Pacific Regional YCT-TJC Committee believes that simply criticizing youths for their viewing habits is not enough.
I think if you do that, you're going to get their backs up against the wall and lose them right off the start. But what is up to us is to offer them quality programming, which will hopefully be as interesting and as captivating as what they're watching now, but of more value to them.
Patricia Groves.
The problem with the youth channel will be in getting youth to like it, even though it's being produced by themselves, because it is competing with the jazzy, entertaining, escapist kind of stuff that behind which there's a lot more money and there's a lot more conditioning and there's a lot, it's easier, and as you know, the human being likes the easy way out.
In addition to offering an alternative to conventional television and media, another solution is to show people, youths in particular, how they are being manipulated and to teach them how to become media literate. Lucy Alderton.
even if you didn't watch television, you would see billboards, print media, you are bombarded by images. So I don't think that we have yet learned, or most people have not yet learned, really discriminating tools, a really strong analysis of what messages and how the messages are being put across to them. But I think we all have a sense that something's not right when it's not right. And we may not be able to describe what it is, but we know it makes us upset, or we know that seeing, you know, a certain image has an effect on us. So that's what we need to explore and understand and teach our young people.
Terry Slavik Sayuki.
If you look at a McDonald's commercial or whatever, it's geared at the child to get them to tell their parents to come to McDonald's and everything. And there's so many ways that we are manipulated by the media right now. And the youth need to be aware of that so that they don't fall into that trap.
Lucy Alderton.
We have been concerned specifically about getting to young people because they are the next generation. And unless we teach young people to decode those images or to reject them, at least to understand what messages are being put across through those images, we won't get anywhere. We'll just have another generation of people that is confused about the role of men and women on television and radio.
As more women enter the media industries, we are likely to see a more positive and realistic portrayal of women in the media. As for the overall cleanup, Lucy Alderton believes that it is up to the public to demand changes.
It is something that has been acknowledged in broadcasting and advertising within the industry for some time, but making the big jump between acknowledgement by the umbrella group and acknowledgement by the individual broadcasters and DJs and people producing the programs is another matter. And so we have to really think, what do we want as a public? Do we want this to continue? Are we going to stand up and demand differences? Are we going to demand a more equitable portrayal of our lives?
For Youth Focus, I'm Jocelyn Sampson.
And I'm Lynn Price.
Youth Focus was produced in the studios of CITR-FM and was made possible by a grant from the Canadian government.